My name is Alex Hernandez. I'm a 21-year-old entrepreneur. Each week, I bring a brand new episode inspiring dreams, growth, and learning. You are now listening to a brand new episode of The H Project. Turn up the volume. It's time to grind. What is up, family? Welcome to episode 59 of The H Project. This episode, I had my friend on, Vaughn Kohler. Vaughn is a ghostwriter, he's a public speaker, and the co-host of the MF CEO Project. The first time I spoke to Vaughn, he was very authentic, and I believe we chatted on the phone for almost an hour, just talking about our stories and just really getting to know each other. I'm super grateful for people like Vaughn, and I know you will enjoy this interview. Before we start, today's challenge of the day is to state your purpose. Go into your book bag, go into your office, take out a piece of paper and a pencil, and write down why you wake up every morning. So this is what I wrote down. My purpose is to leave the world better than it was before I was here. So this meaning to make a positive difference in business, in relationships, and every little action I do during the day. And I really want to just provide value, and I really want to give to people. So that's my purpose. Eric Thomas said, stop waking up in the morning like it was on accident. That's a deep one. That's a super really good quote. I love it. But yeah, do your challenge of the day. And do me a favor, go leave a review on iTunes. Pretty please. So that's enough of my chatter. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of The H Project. Today we have a special interview with the pastor of disaster, Vaughn Diesel. What's the new nicknames you have with DJ God?
Oh, Andy's come up with a couple of nicknames for me. Vaughn the Impaler, and then the recent one is DJ God.
Yeah. So this may be the man with the most nicknames in nickname history, but I want to introduce Vaughn Kohler. How are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Good, man. So let us get acquainted with the listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, currently, that's a really difficult question to answer, really, because I'm constantly trying to answer that question as best as I can. I actually started a business called Vaughn Kohler Communications. It's an LLC. And the primary service that I offer is ghostwriting, primarily for long-form projects like books, self-help books, motivational books, business books, leadership books. But I also do short-form stuff like executive speech writing, blog posts, articles, that sort of thing. My background, as you already alluded to, I was a pastor for 10 years, and then I left that for good reasons, not for bad reasons. Mm-hmm. I left that. I worked for a small liberal arts college, and then worked for actually a bunch of monks for a little while. I was the editor of a men's magazine in St. Louis. I always like to say, not like Playboy, yeah. Like a men's magazine like GQ, you know, for a local audience. And I decided, you know, because I like writing and speaking so much, I decided that I really wanted to make money doing those things and to, or I should say earn money doing those things. You don't make money, you earn money. But so I started writing, I started getting my services out there, and I ended up meeting a great guy by the name of Andy Frisella, and your listeners, a lot of them may know who he is. Andy is the founder and CEO of Supplement Superstores and First Form International, which is a nutritional supplement company. And he built that company, he and his business partner, Chris, built that company over the course of about 16 or 17 years, built that from literally nothing to multiple companies that do over $150 million in annual revenue. And he and I met, and originally I was writing an article about him, and it was just an article for the local magazine. And he and I really hit it off, and we built a relationship over time. And I kept on saying to him, you know, Andy, you have great ideas. You ought to write a book. And he said, I should. But he's like, man, I just don't know if I have the time. And I said, well, you know what? I can help you in different ways. And Andy's different from a lot of my clients in that Andy is a good writer. He's a great communicator. So I'm not really a ghostwriter for Andy. I help him from an editorial perspective and to do other things. But long story short, which I'm already making this a little bit longer than it needs to be, but long story short is that we upped our business sort of relationship. And now I'm really a point man for him, for his personal brand. He started a website called the MFCEO Project. He's also got a podcast that I helped him start. I co-host that podcast. And that's the whole brand. Andy's whole mission is basically motivating people to have greater success in business and life. And the podcast is doing real well. It's consistently ranked real high in iTunes in the business section. And so, yeah, like I mean, it's just hard to describe what I do. I don't know if I did a good job there, but I got my hand in a lot of things, but primarily writing and speaking and on these whole issues of being more successful and killing it in business.
Yeah, no, you did really well explaining what you do, and you know, I feel like there's so much that we can talk about. We can take this to so many different directions, but let's talk about writing first. How long have you been writing professionally, and would you classify yourself as a natural born writer?
Well, I do think there are people who are born with a gift of writing, but as I always tell people, you can always cultivate better skills in writing. So I always tell somebody, if you're someone who absolutely sucks at writing, you can work hard and become a sound writer. Will you ever become Shakespeare? I don't know. But if you're a sound writer and you work hard at it, then yeah, I think you can become Hemingway or Shakespeare or what have you. But so I feel like writing is something I've always enjoyed doing. I certainly wrote a lot as a pastor. You know, I wrote, you know, articles for the congregation. I wrote, you know, manuscripts that turned into sermons. But really, as far as professionally, I did a lot of marketing writing when I worked for Benedictine College. I did a lot of what's called case study writing or case statement writing, which is basically like writing your pitch to help people to raise money to get people to support a particular organization. I did that when I worked for Benedictine Abbey. But really, most of my, you know, I had some articles published on different websites and different magazine sites. But you know, I wrote a ton for the couple years that I was the lead writer and editor of The Nines, which was a men's magazine in St. Louis. So I would say, in terms of making money on full time as a writer, well, I mean, probably unofficially for the last 10 years, and sort of officially for the last 5.
Okay.
If we put it that way, yeah.
And there's one thing that kind of stuck out to me when you said you don't necessarily have to be good, but you can also always cultivate. It's called the growth mindset. Carol Dweck wrote a book called Mindset, and it's the same thing she talked about. You know, she's done a bunch of case studies, and she actually shows that. You're not born with your traits. You can always cultivate and get better at whatever it may be. And for me, it was math growing up. You know, I just did a podcast. I was like, look, I wasn't that good at math growing up because I moved schools in the midst of learning my multiplication times tables. And I was taught that I wasn't just good. And so that was something that I had to step up and say, okay, I can do this, but I have to put in the work. I will never be some mathematician, but I can get by. I'm in a business calculus class right now, and I'm actually one of the top of my class at this point. But
that's awesome.
But what do you recommend for those people who have aspirations to write a book, or maybe they want to start a blog, but they just aren't good at writing?
Well, I would say the same thing you would say with anything. You know, practice makes perfect. It is cliche, but the reality is that, you know, I wasn't a particularly good basketball player in high school or junior high or anything. But when I got into graduate school, you know, I was single. I needed some way to blow off steam. So I started playing a lot of basketball. And just by virtue of playing it every day, I got better. Now, I'm sure I'm not anywhere near as good as the average person. But it's just like anything. I mean, writing is a skill that the more you do it, the better you're going to get at. And I would say, even if all you do is journal, handwritten, a page or two a day, you're going to get better. There's just going to be that natural development of using words.
Yeah, sure. So we talked about writing. Now, what about speaking? Public speaking is a super scary thing for most people. But how could someone get over their fear of public speaking?
I think 80% of public speaking is confidence. Okay.
Yeah,
because it's two things. It's confidence and it's talking about something you know something about, you know, because if I were to ask you, I mean, you tell me, Alex, what's one of your hobbies? What's something you're really passionate about outside of entrepreneurialism?
Working out. Let's say
working out.
Fitness.
Okay. Yeah. So if you were asked, so, and you've probably invested a lot of time in learning about working out, right? So you're going to have a natural confidence about that. Mm-hmm. So if you go and somebody asks you 5 minutes before, hey, I got 250 people that are over in this auditorium and we don't have a speaker. We need somebody to talk about the benefits of working out.
Oh, sure.
Reality is, you're probably going to have to jot down a few ideas, but you're not going to have too much preparation because it's already something you know a lot about. You're very confident. So that's, again, it's one of those things where I tell people the way to build your confidence is to do it. And to also realize that some of the most experienced public speakers still have jitters. Jitters doesn't mean that you're not ready or, you know, you're not prepared. It's just that there's that rush of adrenaline and you're going to be in front of people and there is that natural feeling of, boy, I hope they like me. But again, the more you do it, the less jittery you get and the more you can just deliver.
And the better you are.
Yeah. I would say that the one thing in practical terms that I'm always telling people that, you know, I told this to my students when I taught public speaking is most of us, if it's a topic that we like, most of us don't lack passion. And most of us, if it's a topic we like, we don't lack a knowledge of the topic. Mm-hmm. But what we do need to work on is structure. And the structure doesn't need to be complicated. In fact, the simpler, the better. And so I used to tell my students, you know, don't reinvent the wheel. If you have a topic you need to speak on, come up with a basic introduction. Here are your 3 points. Mm-hmm. All illustrated well, apply it, and then close it. It doesn't have to be just the basic structure, but that's what a lot of speeches and presentations lack. They lack a lot of heart, but it's like, oh my gosh, this has no skeleton for people to be able to follow.
Sure, the more structure you create, the more organized and the more organized your speech will just be, and it'll come out better. And that's the same thing. You know, I haven't talked about this on air or to anyone, but that's the way I'm actually writing my book right now. I just wrote out my 15 chapters, and then I wrote out 4 or 5 sub chapters that are going to be inside each chapter, and then I just broke down each one, and that's how I've been doing it. So it's not like I set out to write out my whole book. And there's no way anyone can write out a book like that would be structured or organized. But exactly what you're saying, it goes along with speaking.
I would also say on both writing and speaking, and I don't know if you experience this. I do. I mean, I'm a veteran writer and speaker, and yet I still struggle with that internal voice that says, oh, this is no good. This sucks. And that's the internal critic that we all have, and we really need to learn how to tell that person to go take a hike. And one of the things that's probably the most helpful thing I ever learned about writing in particular is that there's a woman named Anne Lamott who's been a successful novelist and writer, and people think her stuff is really good in terms of its wit and its, you know, just the beauty of her prose. And somebody asked her one time, what's the secret to really good writing? And I'm going to, you know, Andy always, you know, gives me a hard time because I don't, well, it doesn't give me a hard time, but he always likes to razz me that I don't really cuss that much. But so I'm going to censor what she says a little bit. But what she says is the secret to good writing is crappy first drafts, mm-hmm. you know, and she just was like, you just have to realize that when it first gets out on paper, it's going to be bull. You know what? I mean, that's what it is. And you just have to be confident that it will grow and it will develop and you can polish it, and don't be afraid to get total crap down on paper because it has to start that way.
Dude, 100%. And you know, I almost like those days when I know something doesn't look good. I'm like, oh, this isn't, let's say I'm writing a podcast or I'm writing a book or I'm getting a presentation together. I'm like, oh, I just know this isn't as good as I normally am or as I could be.
But right.
I like those moments sometimes because it really makes me step back and challenge me to, okay, think outside the box. How can I make this better? Or who am I going to go talk to make this better? So I agree 100%. But going on to the next question, I was going through your website, which is nice, by the way. You said you revamped it and stuff, right?
Thanks. Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm still tweaking, but yeah.
Cool.
It's
nice. It flows really nice. But I noticed you mentor men and women who aspire to work on their writing and speaking skills, hence why we're talking about writing and speaking.
Yeah.
But you said communication and connection are your passions.
Mm-hmm.
how valuable is it for people to be able to connect with other people, either in an intimate setting or, we're saying, a business setting?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where, in terms of influencing people, we've all been in those conversations where somebody has shared with us something that is true. You know, like, let's say they're trying to get us to believe something, or they're trying to purchase something, and everything they're saying, we're like, yeah, it's true. What you're saying is true.
Sure.
But are they gonna buy what you're selling, or are they gonna believe what you're telling them? Not really. What accomplishes that is not just when people are convinced that something is true, but all of a sudden they realize it's not just true, but it's meaningful to them. And in order to communicate meaning to people, you have to be able to have some sort of interpersonal connection that's like an emotional connection, which sounds weird because you normally don't think of emotional connection outside of just, you know, like romantic stuff.
Sure.
But the whole point is that the way that we really make an impact on somebody's life is that we don't just connect mentally. We connect emotionally. We connect you know, we capture each other's imaginations. And so usually we do that through sharing a story about ourselves, or just opening up, or being vulnerable. And to me, I mean, there are a lot, I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but there are a lot of people over the course of several years who really wanted to work with Andy. Okay. I mean, he's a millionaire guy. He's brilliant. 100%. And I'd like to think that one of the reasons that I got that opportunity was that when he and I first met and started talking, I knew how to get him to talk about himself. I knew how to get him to open up and share his love of you know, dogs and entrepreneurial and his wife. And I was able to tell stories and connect that way. And so there was that rapport that was established that ended up being an influential thing. And to me, you can't do that if it's all up here. You can't do that if it's all just about sharing truth and sharing information. You have to be able to know how to really connect with people in a way that they're like, wow, that was really meaningful. That was really impactful. Did that make sense at all? I feel like, oh, I sort of
100%, you know, even okay. Energy, we connect with our energy. Like, even talking right. to you, we chat over the phone the first time we've ever really talked, and our energy, we were able to connect right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, absolutely.
It's not, you know what I mean? It's not just here, but it's been just through our voices. We're like, okay, this is someone I can talk to, or I can be friends with, or whatever. So
right.
yeah, 100%, it makes sense.
Well, and while we're on that, Alex, the only thing I would say is that a huge part of that ability to connect with someone in a meaningful way is an ability to share stories about yourself, and to get other people to share stories about them. Because, you know, that's where you really connect, is when, you know, I always tell a story that when I was in seminary studying, you know, about all these things about God, you know, we always heard that, you know, it was important to love people and all that good stuff. And obviously it's true. But I remember learning all this sort of truth about the way that husbands are supposed to love their wives, you know, the way that the Bible tells husbands they're supposed to love their wives. And it was all really academic, you know, like, you're supposed to do this, 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 this. And I remember the day that I graduated from seminary, I was in a really bad mood. Like, I don't even remember why, but I was in a really bad mood. I think it's because I didn't have a job yet. And I was in such a bad mood, and I looked over and I saw this old man and his wife, and you could tell they were like 80 years old. Or older, and he was very well dressed, and he looked like he was in great shape, and she looked horrible, and you could tell that she had dementia, and that she was, you know, like, basically like shoving food into her mouth, and she was just completely out of it. And I'm watching this, and this guy is completely serving his wife after all these years of marriage, right? And all of a sudden she looks, and for a brief moment she has this recognition, like, oh wait, I know who that is. I know who you are. And his response, and I heard him, his response is, ooh, there are the blue eyes I fell in love with. And listen, I'm a dude, but that got me. I was like, wow. And so what? And I immediately was like, what am I doing being in such a bad mood? Like, I should be grateful. And the thing is, the point I'm trying to make with this is, you can study academically something, but until you see it, until you see it lived out, and until you see it sort of embodied in a story, it's not going to really impact you and motivate you and influence you. And that's what I think it's important for all of us to learn how to do. Don't just tell people truth. Communicate it in a way that really impacts and connects. And did that Example makes sense.
100%. Oh yeah.
Okay.
For sure. No, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about connecting with the customer now. Let's kind of bring it back to a business standpoint. How would you recommend a business owner or an entrepreneur create a connection their customer can trust?
Well, you mean in terms of sales or in terms of just like promoting your particular service? In other words, are you saying from a product of an actual selling a product or service, or are you talking about just pitching your whole business as a whole?
Let's talk about your brand first. Let's do brand first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I Andy says this all the time, but, you know, be quick to ask questions and slow to speak. So constantly ask questions about them. Ask about their needs. Ask about what they're trying to accomplish. Ask about, you know, what their hopes and dreams are in life. Ask questions about, you know, what they like to do. Just become a real student of your customer or your client. And to me, that really shows value, and that will help you diagnose how you can help them. It doesn't sound like rocket science, but it really is true. The more questions you ask, the more information you get from them, the more you know how to position what you do in the specific way that's going to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's talk about a sale. I know you and Andy talk about this all the time. I think Andy talks about the tires or something. But yeah, talk about connecting with a customer on a sale, one transaction.
Yeah, well, so I'll just start with how I do it in my specific, you know, business. Is if I'm reaching out to somebody who I think it would be awesome for me to help them write a book, to me, it's just showing genuine interest in them. So for instance, about 6 months ago, I sent an email to a guy that I had heard lived in the St. Louis area. He had been a sports agent for many years, and he had some of his athletes that he worked with were like top athletes. Now, you're a young guy. I don't know if you'll recognize some of these names. But like Jerry Rice, San Francisco, you know, Hall of Fame wide receiver. And this guy had worked with all of these guys. And I thought, man, it would be a huge coup if I could get this guy, because I'm sure he has lots of stories, and I'm sure he you know, would be able to write an incredible memoir. So at first I was like, all right, I'm going to write him an email, and I'm going to tell him all about, you know, my qualifications for ghostwriting and all this stuff. And I wrote this like page email. And at the end I thought, what am I doing? This is not going to be effective. So I erased it completely, and I just said, we'll call him Brian. That's not his name. But I said, Brian, I read about you on a local paper. Man, you have an amazing story. Have you ever considered writing a book? ? I didn't say that's what I do. I didn't say I'm a great writer. I just, have you ever considered writing a book? Of course, at the bottom, it says under my name that I'm a ghostwriter. He responded in 20 minutes and said, I have. I see you're a ghostwriter. Let's talk. You know, and that's, and then we're in talks right now. But so my point is just, again, in connecting with clients or connecting with customers, it just ask them questions. Ask them how can I help you, and find out. Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, it's not rocket science.
And be genuine. I mean, you were just very genuine and authentic. You were being yourself. It's not like you were asking pinpointed questions like, okay, I'm going to ask this question to get, I know I'm going to get this result. Instead, you were like, look, I'm going to approach this guy, and I'm going to, as if you're just friends. I'm going to approach this, just like I approached you. I just wrote you an email. Hey, I'd love to have you on, you know, and just come from just a genuine place, as if even if you got the sale or not, you would still be asking the same question.
Right. Exactly. I guess I should say that the second part of that is that you really need to be prepared to show how you uniquely satisfy what he or she needs. And I always use the example of when I left the ministry, I immediately wanted to go work for a college and I really wanted to teach in their college, but I only had a master's degree. I didn't have a PhD, but I thought, I'm going to come up with a kind of a sneaky way of ending up teaching in their communications department. I'm going to meet with the president, and I'm going to pitch a particular job that I think that they should a position that I think they should have open. I'm going to pitch myself as the ideal person for that job. And then once I work there for about a year, I'm going to say, hey, you guys really ought to let me teach in the communications department. Well, it worked like a charm. Yeah. But the reason it worked is because there were a lot of people that were wanting to work for that college because it was really up and coming. It was growing and it was doing really well. But a lot of times what people would do is they would go to the president and they'd say, oh, I really want to work for you. And he'd say, okay, well, what can you do for me? And their answer would be, anything you want me to do.
Yeah, sure.
Wrong answer. Yeah. Wrong answer. Okay. So when he said, I said, you know, I'd really like the opportunity to serve this great institution. Well, what can you do for us, Vaughn? And I had been a real student of that institution. I'd learned everything I could about it. I found out what they needed. And so I was ready to say, well, this is where I see a need and this is how I can satisfy that need. And I'd love to do it, you know, and that's the asking questions, but I'll, just like I said, being a real student mm-hmm. of your clients or your customers and to find out what they need and how you can help them.
100%. So going on from that, which was a good answer, talking about the customer. Now let's talk about your significant other. How do we communicate and create strong relationships with our wives, girlfriends, parents? How could we do that?
Well, you're asking me that on a day where I have been an absolutely lousy husband.
How so?
Well, you know, men, as you might be aware, we like to be people who, you know, are solution oriented and just have our answers right away. And I think what I'm learning I've been married 3 years in October 13th was 3 years. And what I'm learning is that it's the same thing in every area of life is you got to be able to ask questions and you got to be able to listen. And when I really stop, you know, shut my mouth and I listen to my wife and I ask her questions and I seek to understand, you know, Stephen Covey says this, seek to understand before being seeking. How's he say it? He says, seek to understand before being understood. You know, in other words, everybody always wants, oh, please understand me. But he's like, don't worry about that. Seek to understand the other person first mm-hmm. before you try to help other people understand you. And I think that's been a real recipe for success in my marriages when I did that, when I asked questions. Actually, I have to tell you this really, I mean, for those of your listeners who are in a specific, you know, serious relationships or they're married, my wife and I tried something about 6 months ago, and it was incredible. It was just it was so wonderful. I can't believe we haven't done it again. We're going to do it again soon. But when I was a editor for Men's Magazine, I would be able to interview all these really amazing people, and a lot of them were like Miss America or Miss Missouri from different years. And so my wife would even joke like, "What really incredibly good looking girl are you interviewing today?" And so I thought to myself, well, you know, it's not right that I'm interviewing all these really great looking girls or women and I haven't actually interviewed my own wife. So mm-hmm. I set a coffee date with her. We went out to get coffee at St. Louis Bread Company, and I brought my handy dandy little MP3 recorder. I bought my yellow pad. I had questions specifically planned out just to talk about our relationship. And, you know, most guys – you know, this is stereotype, but most guys can't think of those questions off the top of their heads. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I had prepared that and that I was like literally interviewing my wife like I would interview somebody for an article, it was incredible. We had a real connection. It was really it was really fun. We learned a lot about each other and it strengthened our relationship. So as cheesy as it sounds, I would tell anybody out there, if you're wanting to build your relationship, like actually formally plan to interview them. Don't just have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like ask them questions to go deeper, because sometimes we have to put some effort into the questions and we have to really plan ahead of time to go as deep with people as we need to be able to go.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one of, you know, I'm in a serious relationship, my girlfriend and I know one of my drawbacks at times is where I'm not paying enough attention to her. I'm not listening. And sometimes I'm hearing her, but I'm not listening to her.
Right.
And so sometimes she'll get frustrated with me. And being an entrepreneur, I'm sure you can relate, Andy can relate. You get caught up with so many things. You know, my day, I don't necessarily have like 9 to 5. I'm constantly working. I'm constantly on my phone. I'm constantly networking with people. So sometimes I need to just shut down my phone and listen to her. Which that seems like it's a great exercise, and I just wrote that down in my notes. I'm definitely going to be stealing that one from you.
Yeah, definitely
a good one. I like that. But how important are communication skills if someone wants to be a successful entrepreneur?
Oh, wow. Well, you've got to be able to really clearly communicate what your product or service does. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to obviously communicate with your team members and know how to build them up, know how to correct them in diplomatic and appropriate ways that don't discourage them but actually motivate them. You have to be able to learn how to, I mean, you know, Andy says this and all the great ones say this, is people don't buy from, or people buy from people they like, you know, and you like people that you have that you have established a rapport with. And you're not going to establish a rapport with people if you don't have good communication skills. On top of that, that's more, you know, interpersonal, like speaking. But in terms of writing, just think about how important it is to be clear in emails. Think about how important it is to be clear when you're writing out, you know, like your case study or your case statement for your pitch. You know, all of those things are just incredibly important, and that's why, you know, I think that if you're an entrepreneur, you at the very least, okay, at the most, you should maybe take some sort of course, but at the very least, you know. Get a copy of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Get a copy of Susan Rowan's book, Face to Face. Get a copy of The Naked Presenter by Gar Reynolds. Get a copy of Resonate by Nancy Duarte. I mean, just consume books on how to be better communicators. And then I would also say practice, you know? Like if you're not – sometimes entrepreneurs are very – you know, they're very driven people and they're very detail-oriented and they're task-oriented, but they're not as people-oriented and they're not as skilled in their interpersonal. So go practice. Go out into the mall and or go to a store and just practice getting in – or a coffee shop is a great place because a lot of times people want to talk there. And just practice listening to people and asking them questions.
Yeah, really good. I know you kind of talked about your story the way you got into the college and you went to the dean or whoever you went to.
Yeah.
You kind of talked about it. I want to go a little bit deeper in it because there's one word that comes to mind, that's hustle. I know there's a lot of hustle. It's kind of a buzzword going around right now, but I talk a lot about hustle. So tell us the story how you practically created a new job for yourself at this college.
So going back and telling you more about that?
Yeah, go deeper.
Yeah, no, I mean, basically I was leaving the pastorate and I realized that I lived in Manhattan, Kansas at the time, and I wanted to move to Kansas City, which was 2 hours away, and that's also where my girlfriend at the time lived. Subsequently, she became my wife. But there was this college, and I realized, okay, how am I going to get a job there? Because all of my training up until that point, I mean, I had good, you know, like I had a communications degree and everything, but in terms of my resume was not designed to go work at a college. It was designed to be a pastor, you know. So I had to, like I said, what I did was the first thing I did was I got on their website. I read literally every word of their website. I learned everything I could about not only what the college offered, but how they saw themselves, like what their vision was. You know, and so I learned that. I also figured out the authority structure there. So I figured out like who makes the decisions. Is it the dean or is it the president? Mm-hmm. I found video of the president to try to get a feel of what kind of guy he was. Some presidents of colleges are real eggheads, like they're real academic, but this guy was a businessman and a lawyer, and he was kind of a go-getter himself. So I figured he'd really appreciate someone who was a real go-getter. I felt like timing. This is something I can't stress enough to people. Timing is huge. Okay, so if I was to go in and pitch my, you know, I want to work for you, and here's what I'm going to do, but I was doing it on a day where this guy had tons on his plate, it's not going to be very successful. Okay, so what I did was I thought, well, when is the college president least busy? In between semesters. So I had to be patient and I waited for the end of the semester to where basically I knew this guy was just sitting around, had a lot more on his plate, you know, a lot less on his plate. So I timed it right. And then going back to what we were saying earlier, when I finally met with him, I had a very simplified outline of what I was going to, you know, I asked him questions. I had a very simplified outline of what I wanted to offer, but here's how I opened up. I said to him, I said, you know, there's a list of the top Division III colleges, you know, small colleges out there. And I was really excited to find out that I said their college was listed like 25 in the nation. You know, that showed that they were really going places. I said, you know, my alma mater is Wheaton College. And I had, and I talked about my great experience and how passionate I was about Wheaton College. And I said, you know, that same list that your college, Benedictine College, is on, Wheaton is number one on that list. I said, now, the more that I get excited, or the more that I learn about your college, this guy, this president's college, I said, the more I would like to see you guys knock off my alma mater, and I'd like to help. And I had it planned out. Like, it was, I had it word for word. I mean, I didn't write it out, but I knew exactly the story I was going to say to really connect with him and really be. And I mean, Alex, I thought I was going to be there for 30 minutes. I was there for 2.5 hours. Wow. And he was just like, he was really into it. And he was asking me, well, what do you think about this? And what do you think we could do about this? And what do you think we could do about this? And I was just prepared. And that's the bottom line. It's that you gotta do your homework. You gotta be passionate. You gotta have your pitch. You gotta have a story to connect with somebody. You gotta have the timing right. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you just gotta prepare. Yep. I mean, preparation makes any time I've ever done something really well, it's because I put time into it. Yeah. Anytime I failed, it's because I, you know, kind of thought I could skate by on talent. Guess what? You can't skate by on talent. Mm-hmm. You just can't. I mean, even the great, you know, greatest athletes of the world didn't skate by on talent. Yep. So.
Yep. And that was extremely creative what you did, but you know something else I also noticed was that you brought brought value to that relationship you were creating.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't just get it sit in front of him and say, hey, I want to work for you, and he was just like, well, what are you gonna do for me? He's like, whatever you want. No, you were right. Like, I'm gonna bring you value, and this is how I'm gonna bring you value. And then he was like, wow, okay, he's bringing value. Okay, this is what we can do for you now.
Right.
Same thing you did with the writer, the agent. Same exact thing. You brought your authenticity. You asked questions, and then you brought value, which seems to be a common theme with all your successes so far.
Yeah, and along with that, this idea that if you have certain core competencies, it doesn't matter if you're working for a college or you're in the ministry, or you're working as a co-host of a podcast, or you're a ghostwriter, or you're a CEO of a company. If you have the core competencies of the ability to learn things, the ability to communicate, the ability to connect with people, and just like you said, hustle. Those are the core competencies, and I would also say problem solving, which is the same as sort of flip side of learning. If you have those core competencies, your success is guaranteed. Sure. I'm just going to say that. It's guaranteed. I don't care what area of life you're going to do. If you have those core competencies, your success is guaranteed.
So how can someone cultivate that hustle mentality?
Well, you know, again, I'm quoting him a lot, but Andy always talks about there's a difference between being busy and being effective. And I think, you know, he talks about how sometimes people get overwhelmed when they think about, you know, hustling. They think it means you got to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Andy's like, dude, the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you're on cocaine. I mean, he talks about that. He's like, at some point you're going to burn out if literally you're doing nothing but work. But for me, hustle is again, and this is something that I knew, but it's also reinforced by Andy, is that hustling is about – he had a quote. We had our first Do It Anyway tour event. We had it at Busch Stadium, you know, the Cardinal Stadium.
Yeah.
And the best quote that he said – let me look on my phone, because I want to read it exactly right. But the best quote that he said yesterday that I think really applies to this whole issue of hustle is that he said – let's see here. Sorry.
You're fine.
I'm sure you can edit it out here. Okay, here it is. He said, I'm not an unusually intelligent person with extraordinary gifts. I'm a regular dude who made a daily list of critical tasks that needed to get done, and I did them. And he said that's how he built a multi-million-dollar business. And that's what I would say. When it comes to hustle is literally – write down the critical tasks that you have to do and do them.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Nike had it right. Just do it. Just, and it's working hard, you know, is working smart. It's writing down the things that you, that are priority, and just take them one by one. I think if where people get into trouble is if they think that hustling means you have to get everything done today.
Yeah.
Doesn't. There are certain things that can wait till tomorrow, but you've got to figure out what the things that need to get done today. You got to figure out what those things are and do them.
Yep, 100%. Gary Papazan, no, Gary Keller and Jay Papazan just wrote a book called The One Thing. They talk about time blocking, which I just did a podcast on that, and phenomenal book, by the way. But exactly what you're saying, 100%.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Super good.
Yeah.
Do you have a good time doing the podcast? And what have you learned from being a part of the MFCEO project?
Oh, wow. Yeah, we have a blast being doing the podcast. And we do it a little differently than some people I know that, whether good or bad, some people, you know, they say don't launch your podcast until you've got like 3 months in the can. You know, I'm like, there's no way. I mean, we literally do it a week to week. And Andy likes it like that because it's a little bit more raw. It's a little bit more spontaneous. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, there have been times that we've recorded and when we're done, we're just like, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to scrap it and do it again, you know. But it's fun. I enjoy it. I love the interaction. I love the conversation aspect of it. I think the thing that has really I mean, again, I know this, but it's good to be constantly reminded of this. And this is something Andy says. This is something that I know you believe, Alex. But it's like business is messy. It is not a simple, you know, do this, and everything's going to fall into place. There's chaos involved, and you just have to be bold and go forward and realize that you're not going to do everything perfect all the time. There's some massive changes that we're making to the MFCEO brand. We, you know, after the first event, we realized that it went really well and people were positive about the Do It Anyway tour. But Andy and I both talked about it and we're like, you know what? We're going to really switch things up and we're just going to learn. And it's going to be an evolutionary process. And so I've liked that because I think that's what life is. Life is not neat and clean. Life is messy. And you just have to be willing to risk and to persevere. And, you know, according to Andy, and I think he's right, you know, you got to be part of the 2% that's actually going to finish what you start. But if you do it, you're going to be successful. Yep. And to me, that's what I've learned more than anything is seeing how successful, like, people are talking about how much the podcast has meant to them, how much they're learning. And that's a great feeling to be part of that process. Yep. There's a phrase I heard one time that I thought was really good. It applies is that you get to be you get to enjoy the privilege of the process, and that's to me that's what it's been like so far with the podcast is that I get to be part of something really big,
yeah.
And it's just fun, and it doesn't go perfectly all the time, but man, it's beautiful when things really execute, and when you find out that even when things don't execute perfectly, good things still happen if you persevere.
Yep, exactly. So, and, you know, I want to go back to, you know, people say you need about 3 months in the can before you actually start it. Same thing with me. I did this 2 episodes a week, and Tuesday and Thursday, I actually sit down and then I then record them. I rarely, yeah. Like this podcast will come out on Tuesday, but I rarely save podcasts, you know, because what I've noticed, especially when they're by myself, because let's say I did a podcast and 3 months later, the context of what I said might be different at that point in time. And I've tend to noticed 10 episodes ago, I'm like, I don't like that episode anymore. I'm like,
right.
What was I even talking about? You know what I mean? Even though what I said was right or whatever, and as I truly meant it, but I'm constantly learning. And there's something like, oh, well, I could have said that. I could have said this. And so there's just no way that you can do 3 months and then just launch it all. I like being authentic. I like being raw. Same exact way you guys are doing it.
No, I mean, to kind of borrow what you're saying is that if you would have recorded that 3 months ago, think about how much you learned from 3 months until now. And you just, you know, you would have lost all that. But, you know, again, I get people saying, well, you should be prepared and advanced planning. But I don't know. I think you lose something when it's that far back, you know, that far back.
And if someone truly likes your podcast, they truly like your brand, you know, you missing an episode here, missing an episode there, they're not going to fall off. Like,
no.
You know, they're not. So
he is consistency.
Exactly. Just being consistent, being authentic, being transparent with your people, and dude, 100%. So let's talk about the Do Anything Tour. I mean, that's something that I'm interested in as well.
Yeah.
I know you guys are going out to Vegas next August. I want to try to make that.
Yeah.
I think that'd be extremely cool. And yeah. Maybe one day when I write my book and get into public speaking, come speak with you guys.
Yeah.
That's going to be one of the goals, or maybe get on.
Oh, that would be a great goal. Yeah.
But yeah. We'll chat more about that after, but tell us a little bit about the Do Anything Tour, and where can people get more information on it?
Well, so if you go to the website, themfceo.com, there's actually under speaking, there's a little tab that says Do It Anyway Tour. And I'm just going to be, you know, I'm pretty straightforward. We have a sign up page, but and it's a very functional page in the sense that it lists all the tour dates and it lists, you know, how to sign up for tickets and everything. But to be honest with you, visually, I think it looks terrible. So we are in the process, and this will happen in the next 10 days. We are in the process of really souping up the landing page for the Do It Anyway Tour. So I would tell people, you are more than welcome to visit. We'd love you to sign up, but don't completely judge us on that page, because we realize that it looks kind of ugly. So we are in the process of souping it up. We're going to have video from the first event. We're going to have some other things that, you know, get people excited, get people knowing a little bit more of what we're trying to cover. But basically, it's you know, Andy really straddles a very interesting line in that he is a success motivation guy, but he's also a business guy. So it's trying to bring together, you know, there's going to be different reasons people come to this tour. They might come just because they want to be pumped up, and maybe they're not an entrepreneur, or they're an entrepreneur and they also want to get pumped up. So what we're trying to offer in the lineup is we're trying to offer general stuff about, here are basic principles of success, articulate it in a way that's, as Andy would say, no unicorns, no rainbows, no fluffy, nothing for wilted flowers. I mean, straight truth, like, in a way that's really going to light a fire under people. But also to be really practical and say, okay, if you are a business person, here are some practical tips on branding. Here are some practical tips on sales. Here are some practical tips on, you know, social media, getting your word out. So we try to straddle that line between, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, it's going to be valuable. And it's a day long event. Well, not like 24 hours, but it starts at 9, goes to about 2 o'clock. Ben Newman is also someone who is one of the main speakers. I will probably end up talking, but I'm more of like the MC and sort of directing things at this thing. But Ben, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to download his mental toughness playbook, but Ben has these very proven principles basically that help you become more efficient and help you come up with a vision for your life and how to execute more efficiently and to get things done so that you can have the best possible life. So there'll be talks about that. My favorite aspect of the Do It Anyway Tour is that Andy will have times during the day where he just takes Q&A. He's in conversation with people, and that's where his energy is really at its finest and fieriest, if that's a word.
Now it is.
And so I just encourage people, like, if you really love to be motivated, but you're very often turned off by some of the cheese and some of the, I don't know, inauthenticity of some of the motivational crowd, you're going to get straight truth with Andy, and it's going to be practical. It's going to light a fire, but it's also going to tell you how to accomplish things. And so, I definitely, any questions that people have about it, to learn more about the actual program or any other thing that they want to ask, they can send an email to me, Vaughn@themfceo.com, which is a different email address than my own business email. Okay. But I will get, if people send me an email, I will get it at that address.
Cool. And what I'll do is I'll link up the Do Anything Tour. I'll link up all your IG stuff, your website, all in the show notes, so people
sounds
can
great.
Actually go in and find it. But yeah, definitely check out the Do Anything Tour. It sounds like it's different than what some of the other motivational fluff things are. You know, I think there's it just really depends on what the person is going for, which I think bringing the value of, okay, here's the utility of it, and then here's the motivation of it.
Right.
I think they need to go hand in hand 100%. And with the approach I'm taking with my book, every chapter will have exercises or practices for that person to then do, because I I see that. You need to get them pumped up, but then you got to give them something to follow through.
Yeah. Yeah, powerful and practical. And I should mention too that the way that the Do It Anyway, the way that they that became the title is that Andy is always saying that, you know, everybody has their down days. Okay, everybody's discouraged. Everybody has what he calls tombstone days. Okay, these are the days you just want to die, right? Just die and have somebody, you know, put your tombstone on your grave. And he says, and everything that you feel is basically telling you you quit. Tap out, whatever. And he says it's in those moments that you have to do it anyway. Sure. Just do it anyway. You know, it don't, your feelings don't matter. All that matters is execution.
100%.
Doing your stuff. And I love that, and it's true. And it's there's not a secret recipe. The secret recipe is do the work and you'll get stuff done.
Put the time in. And you know, and yep. I tell a lot of my friends, I tell a lot of my clients that the time's going to pass anyways. Regardless right. of how you feel, a year from now is going to pass if you're doing your work or if you're not. Time doesn't wait for anybody, and the grind does not lie. That's yeah. something I tell everyone. So, yeah, do it anyways. Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, only a few questions left, but every yeah. episode, I like to take a moment to acknowledge who I have on. So I want to acknowledge you for everything that you're doing, man. I'm really grateful that I was able to have you on my show. It's really nice talking to someone that we actually can connect with, you know, and it's cool. I like talking to someone who's just doing it, that first of all is in the podcast world, who's surrounding themselves with millionaires and that's has the hustle to go out and create and cultivate his own future. So I want to acknowledge you for that, and thanks again.
Well, thank you. I hope I haven't rambled too much. No, I feel like I've rambled, but you know.
I love it. I love it. Okay, two questions left. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What are three things you're grateful for?
Oh, wow. Well, the first is my wife and for her patience. And you know, if you, I don't know if you've ever been married before, but if you get married, it's great, but it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard to constantly put somebody else's needs above your own and to sacrifice in that way. But I tell you what, I'm a better man as a result of it. So I'm very thankful for my wife. I'm very thankful. Honestly, I just feel like I'm the most blessed man in the world to be able to work with Andy and to be in this whole space where people are constantly talking about how to get better and how to have the best possible life. So I'm really thankful for that. I'm also thankful. I posted this, I think sometime on my IG a while ago. There was a quote from Bono of U2, and it was something like, thank God that he's really gracious and patient and kind with us because I do a lot of really stupid things. It was something like that. It was a really good quote. And I guess what I would say is that there's a lot of stupid mistakes I miss and stupid choices that I've made. And I feel like the God of the universe is very patient with me and gives me things that I don't deserve. So I'm very thankful for that. So
cool. Good, man. Well, that's a good answer. Last question. I'm writing a book called The Legacy. I've kind of touched on it a couple times. I think this is the most times I've talked about it in one episode. So I think it's because I'm talking to the writer, the ghostwriter himself.
Yeah.
But, so the idea behind the book is to provoke my readers to think about what they want to do or what they want to leave behind long after they're gone. So my last question for you is, if you had one piece of paper and you had a pencil, what would you write down if that's all people could remember you by? One paper.
Wow. Wow, Alex, that's a great question. One character quality,
anything you want. Anything that you want, I mean your kids, friends, family, anybody, just to remember you by. Like they're going to read this and be like, "Yeah, that was Vaughn. That was Vaughn Carter."
Yeah. Okay. Well, have you ever seen the movie Serendipity?
No.
It's a chick flick. Okay, so it's a chick flick with John Cusack and his friend, who is played by Jeremy Piven. They're talking about basically they're at a point in the movie where John Cusack's character, the main character, feels like it appears he's failed in what he tried to do. And so Jeremy Piven is a writer, and so he decides to do this funny thing, and he writes John Cusack's obituary, you know.
I think I've seen
but then
that.
In the yeah yeah but then in the course of the conversation they have, Jeremy Piven looks at him and says, you know, the Greeks didn't write obituaries. They only asked one question when a man died, did he have passion? And I think at the end of the day, I would like people to say, you know, I had passion for my faith. I had passion for the people that that I was close to, that my loved ones, my wife, my kids, my family. I was passionate in being a good friend, and that I was passionate about helping people. And I think living as if there's nothing at stake is you might as well be dead. Because there are huge things at stake in this life. There are, I happen to believe that I believe in eternity. I believe that what we, you know, like they say in the movie Gladiator, that what we do now echoes in eternity. And I want to live with a passion. I want to live with a passion for God and for people. And even I want to be known as someone who, for those people who treated me like crap, I didn't respond the same way. I responded with grace and kindness and love. So
beautiful, beautiful answer. Well, thanks, Vaughn. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you. So again, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Alex. I'm thrilled that you asked me, and I'm honored. And anything I can do for you in the future, let me know. And I'm looking forward to listening to the podcast.
Thank you.
Two confessions. I hate the sound of my own voice, so I hardly ever listen to the podcast. But
Listen to this one. This one's gonna be really good.
Yeah, I definitely will. And you know, I'll give you a shout out on our podcast site, and hopefully people will be able to check out the H Project. But good luck to you. You're doing it.
Another one bites the dust. Had a great time talking to Vaughn. Go check out the MFCEO Project. The link is in the show notes, as well as Vaughn's Instagram. Go give them a follow. They're doing some amazing stuff. The Do Anything Tour is coming soon. Just keep killing it, guys. And don't forget, you are amazing. My name is Alex Hernandez, and I'm out.